Blog Talk Radio.
Franchise interviews from Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia. You're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews. Welcome to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship. Listen to interviews with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys. And now, welcome your host, Marty McDermott, and Franchise Interviews.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Franchise Interviews, where for over 9 years, we've been asking the franchisepreneurs to own one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott. I'm the president of Franchise Interviews, and we have a great show today. We're going to be talking about Hollywood and franchising. We're going to talk about franchise opportunities that got their start from either it was a movie or a successful television show. We're going to start off with a concept called Sunset Tan. And Sunset Tan was a show that was on the E! Network. It was the number one show. It was broadcast in something like 30-something countries, and it was really a very addicting show. Then we're going to meet with Lil Lavelle, who is the founder of Coyote Ugly. And Lil has an amazing story. If you've ever seen the movie Coyote Ugly, the movie was actually based on Lil's life, and today it's now a franchise opportunity. And we actually had to track down Lil at the airport, which was rather interesting, to do that interview. I think that was the first time we've done that in almost 500 shows. And then finally, we're going to talk to Steve Barnett, who talks about one of my favorite movies, Forrest Gump. And in that movie, Forrest Gump, if you remember, there was a character called Bubba. And there's this great franchise opportunity called Bubba Gump Shrimp. And Steve wrote a book called Gumption. It's an amazing book that I really recommend to all aspiring entrepreneurs looking to go into the food business. And that's coming right up on Franchise Interviews. So stick around because we have a full-packed show.
The Stone Coat Franchise Opportunity. Are you looking for a unique and lucrative franchise opportunity? If so, take a look at Stone Coat. With a patented process which creates a true stone finish on almost any wall or ceiling, Stone Coat is a true game-changing product in the multi-billion dollar construction industry. Stone Coat is applied faster, cleaner, and cheaper than conventional quarried stone, which saves both time and money. With advantages in remodel and new construction of both residential and commercial projects, Stone Coat is a true crossover product. The Stone Coat franchise opportunity provides a low startup cost, low operating expenses, comprehensive training, ongoing support, and no royalty payments. For more information on the Stone Coat franchise opportunity, go to www.stonecoatfranchise.com. That's www.stonecoatfranchise.com or call us at 972-380-2700. That's 972-380-2700.
Franchise Teacher.
Would you like to know how to franchise your concept or grow your franchise business?
Meet the experts at Franchise Teacher.
The goal of Franchise Teacher is to teach, coach, consult, and advise. The team of experts at Franchise Teacher will evaluate your business model and present you with a winning business strategy.
Franchise Teacher will help you decide whether or not your concept works and if it's franchisable. Franchise Teacher is proud to have over 30 years of experience in franchising as both franchisees and franchisors.
Franchise Teacher are developers of over a dozen franchise systems, which include brick and mortar as well as home-based concepts of nearly 3,000 combined franchise locations.
Whether you need to add more units or get more customers, Franchise Teacher can help. We will teach.
Franchise Teacher will help you learn our proven system.
Coach.
Franchise Teacher will help you provide a game plan to succeed.
Consult.
Franchise Teacher will make sure you stay on track.
And advise.
Franchise Teacher will help you learn from our over 30 years of experience in franchising as both franchisees and franchisors. Take advantage of our free, no-obligation phone consultation. Simply go to franchiseteacher.com or call us at 561-385-3032.
That's franchiseteacher.com or call us at 561-385-3032.
Hi, this is Connie McDermott, Administrative Assistant for Franchise Interviews, LLC, and you're listening to Franchise Interviews.
Franchise Interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.
Well, today, Don, we have a great show. We're meeting with the Vice President of Franchise Development for LA Sunset Tan, Mark Kickenup. And as I mentioned earlier, Mark's been involved in franchising, not to date him, for over 25 years now. And LA Sunset Tan Productions has been branding their name for over 5 years, and their reality show, which I mentioned to you that I'm a big fan of and my wife Connie's a big fan of, hit the number one spot on the E! Network with, I believe it was over 30 million viewers. And LA Sunset Tan is redefining the Bronze Age by introducing the world to the most luxurious and innovative tanning concept ever experienced. Hey, Mark, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Let me get out of the tanning bed here. I'm getting tanned this morning.
Oh, there you go. You got a good life, Mark.
There you go. There you go. Even an old guy can be tanned.
There you
know?
Go. Mark, joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson of Diamond Financial. I know, Don, you wanted to say hello to Mark.
Yeah, hey, Mark. Appreciate you coming on the show. You know, Marty and I are really starting to become more familiar with your show. I was just down at the IFA show. Orlando got to meet someone from your company, and, you know, we're very excited to have you on today.
Well, great. I'm looking forward to it.
That's fantastic. Well, Mark, we always like to start off asking where you're calling from today. It sounds like you're in the tanning bed, but
I'll clean that up a little bit. I'm actually here in my office here in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh, okay, good. That's fantastic. I know you've kind of been all over the United States over the last several months. It sounds like you're back and forth from Jersey to California.
Oh, California, Florida. I've been there twice already, but you know we're starting to expand the brand here across the country, and that means lots of frequent flyer miles, as you can imagine.
That's fantastic.
we've had just such a great reception with it. You know, it's I don't know of many franchises over my actually 28 years now, guys. I was listening for my generation earlier, and
right.
I'm ahead of one of you by about a year there. But,
there you go.
But we've just had such a great reception with it, with the show and all. And, you know, I don't know of any franchises I've been involved in or around that has a TV show. So this has been an interesting way to launch a business.
Oh, yeah. This is certainly, I guess, a unique situation. You know, Mark, probably as long as you've been in franchising, I guess something like this hasn't really happened before, you know.
Yeah, they only have black and white TV when I started.
There you go.
You know, it's quite a difference now. But you know, it is amazing the power of the television.
Sure, absolutely.
And it really
absolutely.
Is.
And the show is fantastic, by the way. I mean, I've been a fan. You know, my wife Connie's been a fan. I've been a fan from an entrepreneurial perspective of just watching the show, watching these two guys, you know, launch this business, and it was just. It was just very interesting for me. While my wife Connie liked the stories, you know, just going on. So, just really great. I know you've been involved in franchising for some time, Mark. How did you get involved in franchising?
Well, it's I don't know if you've got enough time on the show here, but you know, a lot of years ago, I went to Indiana University, decided I didn't want to be in the Midwest, and moved out really to Wyoming to purchase my uncle's business. He had a window covering, storm doors, and awnings business. Ended up being the family, I call it like the family nightmare. All the cousins wanted to get into the business, and I said, this isn't going to work. I don't want to go to corporate America. And this is back in, 74, 75, 76. Yeah. And somebody said, well, why don't you be a fireman? And I said, a fireman?
Right.
And I says, well, you work 10 days, you've got 20 off, and everybody seems to have started their own business. So I said, bingo, I'll try that. So got into the fire department, had an installation business. We did draperies and carpet and stuff like that. And my number one customer in Casper, Wyoming, which was the only franchise west of the Mississippi, was a decorating den. You guys have probably heard of that before.
Absolutely.
Been around for, 40 years now. And he was going to sell the business, and I said, my God, you're my top customer. I'll buy the business.
Right.
So my entree into franchising was a home furnishings business with decorating den and being a fireman 10 days a month. And I didn't, you know, you guys are into finance business, and here I was, a blue-collar kid from Chicago, no money, and I needed a lot. And so I ended up building a home, myself, found a lot, got the equity in it, and went to the SBA in 1983 when the interest rates were 18.5%.
Wow.
And purchased my first business by building a house so I'd have equity and an asset to get into it. And
that's fantastic.
Kind of the rest is history. Sold that in Casper after about 5 years, moved to Denver, and kind of launched there in those days, was called the Master License Program.
Right.
And built out the kind of the West Forum, and then just kind of moved around from there. Really liked helping people get into the business as much as running it.
Right.
And spent some time with Decorating Den, Sir Speedy, a lot of different companies like that. The service brands with Molly Maid helped launch 1-800-DRY-CLEAN and Mr. Handyman there for them. And
yeah, we've had them on the show, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and great people. And you just learn so much and see so much being a consultant in the business. And
absolutely.
One day the phone rang at, you guys may know Lane Fisher from Philly.
Right.
Very big attorney in the franchising business. And his friend Larry Rudolph from L.A. Sunset Tan, who was Britney Spears' ex-manager,
right,
called him and said, "We want a franchise. Who do you know?"
Exactly.
And my phone rang, and I ended up out in L.A. And
that's fantastic.
We started putting the building blocks together, you know?
That's terrific. Great story.
So, Mark, you said you're being a fireman. I'm sure fighting fires on the business side was probably just as rough when you first started Decorating Den. That was probably a pretty tough adjustment taking all that on.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about matching people to the right concept and different things like that, and here you have a fireman that becomes a decorator, right?
Right.
And, I don't think I'd have passed the profile test today, but, you know, I was a businessman. I hired decorators and managed them and ran the business. But you're right. The only thing about the business that wasn't life and death is my full-time job was at that time.
So you've been in franchising, obviously, a long time. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen over the last 20-plus years, Mark?
Well, I mean, we've got to go to the Internet, right, after Al Gore invented it for us.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the shows started going away, and I think some of the biggest changes were is finding the people that wanted to buy a business. I'm sure you've had a few segments on this. Once the Internet came out and all these things started happening, is how do you make that switch from standing in a booth 30 times a year shaking somebody's hand to, trying to shake hands across the Internet electronically.
Right.
And, our group here at Franchise Outsource, which is our consulting company, mm-hmm, we've got 15 guys that look like they're 50 or 55 years old, and we like to think that 15 of us have made that transition and learned as well as we can how to communicate and work with people on the Internet. But if I look at anything from a retail standpoint or even from the development side of helping people in the business, I think the Internet has by far been our biggest change.
That's something.
Yeah,
it can make small companies look big, which can be a problem for people looking. You know, it's a lot of window dressing on companies that you got to figure out what is behind those screens and get on a plane and go see people today, I think.
Right. Also, just the amount of franchise consultants out there, it's been a pretty big change. All the different companies, people helping people rather than just being on their own. So you're right, Internet, a good source of getting that initial information, but then where they go from there, I think the franchise consulting industry has been pretty big.
Well, it's really amazing. I mean, I don't know, have you guys tried to figure out how many consultant networks are out there now? Is there 25?
Well, our company's provided financing. We're specialists in franchise financing, and we've dealt with at least about 6 or 7. I'm sure there's a
right.
bunch more.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm counting some that are, one or two Z's or three or four people. But,
right.
You know, some of these groups have upwards of 300, 350 people. So, I'm looking at 1,000 consultants out there probably talking to 30,000 people a month, I would guess.
Right. Absolutely. Have you been surprised about the new types of concepts coming out, Mark? Like when you go to the shows, I'm always fascinated with some of the concepts that are out there. It's quite interesting.
I mean, that's a great point. Doing this for 25 years, and, there, some of you know, there was a lot of shows going on out there, and you'd see these concepts. But what the IFA has been bringing in, 200 to 300 new members, probably
exactly.
on the average over
right.
the past 5 years?
Right.
And you think, well, how can there be a new concept? Haven't we franchised it all? And, boy, I was in California, and there sat a choo-choo engine. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. No.
Yeah, it was it was a vehicle, but it was kind of a long train, and they would take that. You were talking about children's parties and things like that earlier.
Right.
Right.
And sure enough, this guy drives his train over to somebody's birthday party, and they drive around the neighborhood in
it. That's incredible, isn't
it? Yeah, I heard about that, but didn't see it,
Yeah, it was, you know, hopefully that's not a train wreck ready to happen. I couldn't help myself. So couldn't help myself with that. But, you know, then I walked around the show, and you know, I was very interested to see there was an olive oil franchise. Have you seen that one?
No, no.
Well, you know, kind of like a wine store, except with high-end olive oil.
That's incredible.
Who have we had on, Marty? We've had a rice pudding franchise.
Rice pudding, peanut butter franchise. Yeah, we've had some interesting concepts since starting the show, Mark. I mean, it's just been fascinating. We had Julie Bennett, who wrote the Franchise Times book, Guide to Selecting and Buying a Franchise.
Mm-hmm.
She was telling us about a porta-potty franchise from Spain. I don't know if they were at the show. At the West Coast Expo, but
I didn't see them. But you know, it's a heck of a business. I guess
sure.
You know, if you can franchise hair cutting, you can franchise anything.
I guess so. It's like she's described it as like an upscale porta potty. You know, so I just said, wow, who would ever think of something?
How about
like
something
that?
Like 1-800 got junk, which is pretty well known. But you know,
right.
That type of concept becomes a franchise. You know, really anything, or you know, most could be franchised and be
successful. The one that puts the biggest smile on my face is Poop and Scoop.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, come on. You know,
right.
I mean, you talk about the new concepts, and you know what? It's a heck of a service when it comes down to it.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, it is. It's a necessity. Great idea.
So how's your experience been like at L.A. Sunset 10? You've done so much before that started. I imagine it's really been a whirlwind since you got involved with it, Mark.
Well, you know, it really has. You know, about the end of July, beginning of August, I was out there for some meetings and sat down with the boys, talked to them a little bit, and they said, well, I think you're the right guy. So you talk about baptism by fire is we're sitting there in our meeting, and they asked me, what do you think about being on the television show? And I says, well, I've done speaking.
Right.
I've made appearances. I'll probably survive. And they said, well, that's good because they're currently filming in West Hollywood store, and they want to introduce you to the show in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 20 minutes.
Not
20
much prep.
Minutes. This
oh, my God.
This is a true story. This
I saw that
story.
Show, by the way, Mark. Just
oh, you did? I'm
did.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sorry you had to sit through that. But that's what you had seen was about 40 minutes of shooting for that 5 to 6 minute segment.
That's incredible.
And with 20 minutes notice, we went over there. You know, we drive into the driveway there. They take me out. They're miking me up. I'm signing release forms.
Oh,
and
amazing.
The cameras are rolling. I says, what do you want me to do?
Right.
And I says, go in there, do a store tour, and work Nick over at the front counter. Let's go.
That's incredible.
And we walked in and really did shoot probably 30 to 40 minutes, and that 5 or 6 minute segment came out. So that was a new experience for me,
sure.
And all of a sudden we're talking about franchising on TV. You know, the one thing I like to point out about these guys is you've been around franchising long enough that entrepreneurs sometimes don't ask for help until they get in trouble.
Right, true.
And I really think that, you know, I'm fortunate they chose me to package this, but they went to look for a franchise professional to make a franchise out of their business. And I think a lot of franchisors miss that.
Right.
That, okay, we're in the tanning business. We know how to run a franchise. Well, they have realized early that those are two different businesses.
Exactly.
And, you know, I sit here every day and wonder what our next new surprise is going to be. And our biggest surprise here just lately was that the E-Channel themselves have become marketing partners with us in the franchise.
That's fantastic.
Which is just huge because
sure.
Now they benefit every time somebody takes a tan in a bed or somebody purchases a franchise.
Absolutely.
They also, Devin and Jeff, the founders of the company, became executive producers this year.
Oh, really?
Which gives them, you know, more content control.
Right, right.
So we're going to be talking about the franchise here in 08. We start filming March 10th next week. And we will be launching the premiere of Season 2, I believe, on May 25th.
That's great.
Yeah. And now, I don't know if you've been paying a lot of attention to it. We've opened another company-owned store with George Maloof in the Palms New Tower.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're going to be doing the big grand opening that will be filmed for TV on May 31st there.
And
for people listening, it's on the E! Network, and what's the you know, the day of the week it's on, Mark?
It'll be on Sunday evenings, depending on your time zone, you know, 7, 8 o'clock in the evening. So.
Right, right.
Very interesting. But, you know, I just bring that up because every time we turn around, there's just something new going on. I mean, the public relations of this, Fishman does our public relations in the franchise industry, and BWR is a PR firm in the entertainment industry, and you know, these are probably one of the first franchises I haven't had to do a lot of heavy internet advertising or conventional advertising because of the show and the amount of press this gets.
Oh,
very different lead.
Yeah, I mean, it's very unique, like we've been speaking about. Yeah, I mean, and that, you know, I guess that saves a lot to the bottom line because, you know, very expensive, all that marketing and advertising. Doing the trade shows, our company exhibits at all the shows as well.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Yeah, I remember Devin said in an interview, Mark, I guess he was saying that they were getting, like, franchise requests in over a dozen languages, you know, which I said, that's incredible. I mean,
yeah,
it makes sense, though. I mean, with, you know, 30 million viewers, you know, the number one show, it's you must be on the phone all day.
Well, I'm on the phone with several other people, quite frankly. But, you know, we're in, I think, 114 or 117 countries.
Incredible.
The biggest challenge I have with the business is holding back on the reins.
Sure.
You know, with the requests we have for international right now, we've been around for 6 months, is just tremendous. We're trying to grow the country in pockets. And in our first year here, you know, really my goal is to have about 20 franchisees that purchased, you know, 45 to 50 units and
Right. Probably
have 12 to 15 open this first year. And we got to get that foundation underneath us. And, you know, could we have gone out and sold 100? I think we could have.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to hold that back and make good choices. And the quality of the lead, I think, is just the most interesting part. It's either a fan that wants on the show or a fairly well-heeled, sophisticated investor that understands the power of TV.
Right, absolutely.
And what makes LA Sunset different? I've gotten to be familiar with a few of the tanning franchises out there, and some have done well, some have had problems. What really makes LA Sunset, you know, different from some of the others?
Yeah, you know, as you know, in franchising, I think 80% of the equation is putting the right person in there,
right,
and then getting the location right, you know. I think our biggest difference is, obviously, movie stars aren't going to be walking into an LA Sunset tan in Ohio.
Right.
But what we're trying to do is what I would say create a celebrity experience.
Mm-hmm.
Our salons, if you walk into them, is going to feel more like a day spa. You know, we don't have portable walls. We've gone to the higher-end beds that are much better for you. They don't burn like the old beds used to. And then we offer three different options of sunless treatments. A couple machines, one called the Caltan Tower and the other one's Versa Spa, that actually will condition your skin, tan you, and then do a post spray on you and then dry you off. So people that are worried about UV rays but still want to look tan in their nightgown, or if they're going, you know, to the islands for a vacation, you know, they can get that look and be in pretty good shape. But clean and safe is important, a celebrity appearance and you know, really a experience, and just being treated right, feeling good about yourself being in there is what we're trying to accomplish.
Right. Trying to give them the Starbucks experience, I think, is what you mentioned. Is ready.
That's very fair, yeah.
With you, Mark. Yeah, absolutely.
And you can't underplay the show. I mean, I don't go to the show first, but, you know, we have a 22.5-minute commercial on the E-Channel 12 times a week, usually,
sure,
when we're in season.
Absolutely.
And it's just wonderful to drive people through the front door to go to a Sunset Tan and get that experience.
Absolutely. I recall in another interview with Devin, I think he got into this whole thing. Robert Redford always had a tan and a white shirt when he was going to do an interview or something like that. You know, just thought that was very interesting.
Well, Devin tells a great story because he's from the same – we're both Hoosiers. We're from Indiana.
Okay.
And Devin had moved from Valparaiso, Indiana, went to California, couldn't wait to get out there, see the ocean. Well, he had moved to Fresno.
There you go. It wasn't close.
And he couldn't see the ocean from there. And it's kind of a great story to hear him tell it. And I went out there for the California experience. I end up in Fresno. And he started tanning there because he was going back to see people. And I said, well, you've been at the beach? You know.
Right.
Then moved down into the L.A. Valley and got into real estate, met Jeff Boz. And, you know, they opened up on Sunset Tan about 92, 93 on Sunset Strip was their first store. So
that's fantastic. How big is the industry, Mark, for LA Sunset Tan?
I mean, the industry itself, or
yeah, the industry. I guess the tanning industry itself. Are there any numbers?
You know, it's like everything. It's just all over the place.
Right.
you know, with that, it's kind of a segment. It's kind of in the health and beauty. It's hard to separate those out. But, you know, there's probably about four or five major franchise players in the industry. Unfortunately, with a lot of things, whether you're talking about handyman or maid services, you know, there's a lot of little mom and pops that throw some bad beds in a corner. You know, some gymnasiums that'll put a bed in here or there. But, you know, really getting it organized, you know, there's about three or four franchises that are really moving forward. You've got your Hollywood Tans out there. You've got your Planet Beaches going out there, Palm Beach Tan. And, you know, we're very excited about moving forward with this. We went to the World Tanning Conference in October in Nashville, of all places, at the Opryland. And it was amazing, all the folks in the tanning industry. That's where we launched the franchise. And there was just literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people coming up to us, thanking us for really bringing tanning to the forefront again.
That's great.
You know, with the show and all that. And you can imagine at that tanning conference, 8,000 people, if you were in tanning, you're probably watching the show. So these folks were literally rock stars down there. We filmed for 3 days at the conference, and a lot of that footage you're going to see in episode one and two this year. So.
That's great.
Wow. So, Mark, asking the question, what's the most interesting thing that's happened to you? It's probably a lot of the TV stuff going on or hearing Devin's stories.
You know, I have to admit, I've worked with a lot of great franchises over the years. They've been very successful, profitable for the owners and things, but you know, this one puts a smile on your face every day, if you can imagine. Because what I'm trying to do is take pieces of the show and what they do nationally and use that in the franchise system. I mean, we're really in a couple, three different businesses. We're in, you know, the entertainment business. We are starting a Miss Sunset Tan, kind of like the Hawaiian Tropic Contest nationwide. They will have a product line of clothing, and different types of suntan lotions and things like that. And then we have the franchise company. So there's a lot of moving pieces. It keeps me going every day.
That's fantastic.
You know, Mark, I predict you probably know this already, like maybe not another, say, competitor, but I believe there's going to be some other franchise seeing the success of your franchise on cable, TV, and everything going on that they'll probably end up doing that also.
Sure. Or they'll want to do it, right.
Yeah.
Well, I can't tell you about the 20 or 30 calls I've received and say, hey, how can you get my franchise on TV?
Right.
There you go.
You know, it's
sure.
It's an interesting place to be in, and obviously this was backwards. They had the business. They had the reality show going already when I showed up.
Right.
And, you know, television, as I'm learning from, you know, really these guys in that business, that you don't just walk in there. I mean, there's thousands of ideas. You can remember the old Seinfeld when they were pitching their show about nothing?
Sure.
Right.
There you go.
Remember George and Jerry? Yeah, there's a lot of people pitching shows about nothing, I'm sure.
That's fantastic.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a good example. So you mentioned how important the franchisee is to the success of the franchise system. So I'm sure there's, you know, certain characteristics you look for a new investor or franchisee, Mark?
We really do. I mean, you know, if we're talking specifically about, you know, L.A. Sunset Tan, I'm looking for somebody that lives what I would call an active and healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same people that are going to a gym and working out, people that are taking supplements, people that are active, are really our customer.
Right.
You know, our customer's not kind of a shut-in that doesn't want to get out, and so on and so forth. But so we're certainly looking for somebody that understands the lifestyle. You know, our investment, you know, depending on leasing and build-out, runs anywhere from $300 to $650, so we need a fairly financially solid person.
Right.
And our concept really allows you to keep your job and transition into this by looking at our multi-unit model, where you can get managers in place and open up two or three and, you know, spend 10 to 15 hours a week sticking your head in and decide when to transition out of your business. And I'm sure you've had a few shows about the economy, the word recession that's been thrown around, so on and so forth. And
yeah.
I really think a lot of people are going to be looking at kind of shoring their future up with a franchise opportunity this year.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Good times or bad, there's always room for franchise ownership, people getting downsized or, you know, whatever the case. Yeah, we've had shows about that. You're right, Mark.
Yeah, and I just got to believe is, you know, if you have a good job now, you're not walking away from it. But probably a lot of the franchise concepts, that allow you to keep your job with, you know, I hate the word absentee ownership, but you know what I mean, less involved ownership.
Right.
And allow you to get this built in case times get tough. But, you know, I'm sure you're not seeing that with the real economic numbers, but, you know, with the election going on, it's doomsday out there. So.
And, Mark, I only consider a few different franchise businesses where you can have that, you know, not as involved in the franchise, you know, say hair cutting, but I think tanning is one also. Do you accept that type of franchisee who, you know, maybe is not going to be there on a full-time basis?
Oh, yeah, we certainly do. I mean, obviously they've got to identify a manager, how they're hooking that person in. But,
right.
You know, you're really looking at 3 to 5 employees to keep the salon open 7 days a week. And, you know, in multi-unit ownership, the less moving parts you can have, you'll be more successful.
Right.
So you don't really look for business ownership experience in the past or real, say, sales experience. Those aren't a few things that maybe you look for?
Well, you know, this business is, in the way they've been successful with this in L.A. would be promotionally. They get out there, they get involved with the community, you know, they get promo girls out on the street, they get involved with gyms. So this doesn't make you a storekeeper.
Right.
Which I really like about it. You can get out and get active in the community. So we're looking for someone with a great personality. We also have an area representative program where you can buy several counties and have the rights to open up 30 to 40 units, selling those to franchisees and doing that. And currently, I will not take anybody in that position that hasn't been an area developer and an area rep, so we can provide the correct support.
Right.
Well, with a great personality needed, I guess, Marty, you and I would be great franchisees for this.
There you go.
Well, you guys would be all over this, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I like how you guys are very selective, Mark, you know, and I think you mentioned you're not selling franchises. You guys are rewarding franchises, which I thought was very interesting.
Well, you know, we've all said that in all of our careers, we've always wanted to really try to select the right franchisees,
right.
And I've done several interviews of people saying, well, boy, this thing could go too fast, it can fall apart, all of those different type of things. And the TV show and the lead flow that we're getting really allows me an opportunity to make a lot of choices.
It's true.
About people. And, you know, we still take them through a qualification process, different things like that, to make sure that this is working. And we just have more to choose from, and we want to go slow and make sure we make those correct choices as we're doing that.
Right, right. What is the training like, Mark, for new franchisees? I know one time I mentioned, or you mentioned to me, that your discovery days are called like auditions. They're really interesting.
Yeah, it's called audition day, yes. And, you know, that's kind of fun. The people fly in. We go to kind of a new wave hotel in the L.A. area, so they can kind of get that experience. And then we pick them up in a limo. We do a few store tours, go through more of a discovery day with a PowerPoint at the office, go over to the LA Sports Club and have lunch with them, and they spend about 2 hours with the founders and the owners, and then come back, and then we take them back to the hotel. But the training for this is we do 5 days in one of our salons, mm-hmm. in training area in Beverly Hills, and then once your store is ready to open, we come back to your area for 3 days before your soft opening.
Right.
You know, along with phone support and different things like that. And something we did that we wanted to make sure we protected the brand was we use One Source Retail to do all the build-outs of our stores.
Right.
So we have, they stock 10 packages down in St. Louis. So when they go out and you get your white box ready, that they come in and do the build-out, so we have it branded and every salon will look the same.
That's great. Is there an ideal location, Mark, that you envision?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ideal location is you're looking for probably a strip center, 2,000 square foot footprint.
Right.
And I want to see a gym somewhere.
Right, absolutely. That makes sense.
Because, you know, kind of one stop. People will work out, then they'll tan, you know, and kind of one stop shopping for them.
Right.
So yeah, that would be ideal. The closer you can get to the gym, I think the better off you are.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
I bet you the grand openings are a lot of fun.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The type of theme and, you know, what your franchise is all about.
Well, they really are. You know, we actually have the owners escrow $15,000, And then we put in as corporate $10,000 into that, so they have a $25,000 grand opening package. And we have the cast members come out also.
That's fantastic.
So we put our PR people into the market. We get the advertising, radio, TV, billboards, whatever it takes. And we really want to get these franchisees off to the right, what I call that 90-day critical period.
Right.
Well, you know, hopefully you'll have some New Jersey and Pennsylvania soon. My background with the name Johnson, Swedish, very fair-skinned. I need some color.
You know, the funny thing is you will only get so dark. We get people that keep tanning, and, you know, if you're Irish or Swedish, you're only going to get so dark.
Right.
You know, you only can go so far. Well, we're going to take care of that for you because we should be opening around May 1st to the 15th in the Ramsey area in Bergen County.
Wow, that's excellent.
Incredible, yeah.
Well, I have roots up there where I was born, went to college. I'm more down in Central Jersey. I'm sure the...
Well, we'll work our way down there. But, again, we're pocketing. And, you know, you talk about the quality of a franchisee. Our franchisee's name is Inez up there.
Yeah.
And she worked for a day spa and ran a day spa that has a customer list of 30,000 people and make sure 400 to 600 people a day had a great experience.
That's fantastic.
And those are the kind of people, you know, as you ask about our operators and who they should be. You know, here's somebody that understands pampering.
Right, absolutely. Right.
You know, so we're real excited about that. New Jersey was a little bit off the beaten path for us, but
right.
Her and her future husband purchased 4 units up there, and they're going to be opening those up in the next 2.5 years. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. And was she a fan of the show too, Mark?
She was.
That's
she
incredible.
Was.
That's
yeah,
amazing.
Again, being in that business, you know, she caught it.
Right.
About half of our franchisees have been a fan of the show. Most of the guys don't admit being a fan, by the way. They're like,
I shouldn't.
Oh, my wife watches this, and I
exactly.
happen to
That's what
look over her shoulder, you know. So you guys are pretty brave out
there. That's what I've
been
saying.
This morning. Yeah, I heard you. Yeah, everybody says, oh, no, I don't watch the show. But
my wife watches it, and she turned me on to it.
Right. But very interesting, very provocative in
yeah.
some cases. But,
absolutely.
You know, it became the number one show on E! After our first 5 episodes. We passed The Girls Next Door. And
that's right, yeah.
Over 30 million people in, like I say, about 14 different languages.
It's incredible. What would a typical day be like for an L.A. Sunset Tan franchisee, Mark?
Well, you know, if it's an owner-operator, they're obviously, you know, the hours are a little long in the salons, quite frankly. If you're by a gym, you want to match up to their hours. So
right.
if that gym's opening at 6 in the morning, you probably ought to be opening at 7.
That makes sense, yeah.
But, you know, really a typical owner is going to make sure, you know, before they go home at night, they're going to clean the salon up. It'll be ready for opening in the morning. You know, this business surges in the morning. Kind of a lunch hour, and then again after work. Again, if you think of a gym, that same kind of cycle. They would be working with their employees. The owner should be out marketing, not standing behind the counter. You know, working with promotions with different gyms and different things like that. You know, they get big into, if you think about weightlifting and bodybuilding and aerobic shows, those people are pretty tan.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you can work there by setting up booths. And I think one of the unique things we have would be our portable spray tan, where we will actually go to somebody's home. And, you know, the easiest way to explain it, and Devin and Jeff would probably shoot me, but you guys are familiar with our old Shive or Mako.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sure.
We actually have a hand spray gun that we can go and actually spray people just like you'd be painting a car. And you can really define the body that way, really get a
right.
very even tan. And that's something we actually take to people's home for them and cater to them. A little booth pops up, and you spray them and put it down, and off you go.
Yeah, I've seen that on one of the episodes, Mark, actually, where they went to a celebrity's home, I think, and they were, I think, using that spray thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really becoming very popular. We can do that in the salon itself, or if your request was to come to your home, we can do that also.
Didn't Earl Shive say, I'll paint any car, any color for, I think it was a couple $100. You guys, you know.
Well, I'm a lot older than you then, because I remember when they used to say $29.95, you know,
right.
when I lived in Chicago. So.
So you'll spray paint any body, any color at the tanning.
There you go. But, you know, the sunless, you know, the tanning in the beds, depending on the package you buy, usually is anywhere from $8 or $10 a tan to $25.
Right.
And then when you get into the sunless, which really, you know, if you spray about once every 10 days to 2 weeks, you'll keep a tan as anywhere from 35 to, oh, say $80 to $85, depending, you know, whether it's a hand or a machine doing it. So.
Wow, so even the spray, that can last that long with, you know, there could be a whole bunch of showers, people bathing between that. I guess that stuff just stays on the skin.
Right, and then there is a pigment in it that, you know, there's two ways to do it. When you first tan, you can have either become tan immediately or, you know, over the next 4 to 5 hours, it actually brings the color out of your skin. So you just have to stay out of the shower for, you know, 4 or 5 hours, and after that you just kind of function normally. You're not going
to,
you know, you're just not going to wash that off.
That's great.
That's great. Mark, we have about 1 minute. What's the best way to get more information on you and the L.A. Sunset Tan franchise opportunity? Any websites would you like to plug?
Yeah, I think, you know, always the easiest thing is to go to our website, which is www.lasunsettan.com.
It's a great
website. Or just sunsettan.com.
That's fantastic.
We've got all the information on there. You can request information or you can give us a call.
That's great. We'll put a link up on our website as well, Mark, you know, so people can easily get access to those websites. And I want to thank you. You've been a fantastic guest. I think Don and I would like to have you back in another 6 months and just keep following the success of this great opportunity.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on, and hopefully we can talk again.
Yeah,
thanks
keep up
again,
the good
Mark.
Acting work, Mark.
Absolutely.
There you go. Well, you have to watch. I'll be on again this year. So
oh, that's fantastic.
Right.
And if your wife is watching it, make sure you see it, okay?
There you go.
I will.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
All right.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Great.
Are you looking for a franchise that delivers? Businesses will always need shipping, and for more than 25 years, loyal customers have depended on Unishippers for reliable savings and exceptional customer service. Unishippers is focused on just one thing, helping small and medium-sized businesses save time and money on all their shipping needs. And as the largest reseller of complete shipping services in the country, we have the buying power to ensure that we succeed. The Unishippers franchise offers low startup costs, no equipment or real estate required because they're not retail, residual income, and a quality of life and work-life balance. For more information on becoming a Unishippers franchisee, go to www.unishippers.com and click Franchise Opportunities or call Franchise Development at 801-708-5822. That's 801-708-5822. The Stone Coat Franchise Opportunity. Are you looking for a unique and lucrative franchise opportunity? If so, take a look at Stone Coat. With a patented process which creates a true stone finish on almost any wall or ceiling, Stone Coat is a true game-changing product in the multi-billion dollar construction industry. Stone Coat is applied faster, cleaner, and cheaper than conventional quarried stone, which saves both time and money. With advantages in remodel and new construction of both residential and commercial projects, Stone Coat is a true crossover product. The Stone Coat franchise opportunity provides a low startup cost, low operating expenses, comprehensive training, ongoing support, and no royalty payments. For more information on the Stone Coat franchise opportunity, go to www.stonecoatfranchise.com. That's www.stonecoatfranchise.com or call us at 972-380-2700. That's 972-380-2700. Franchise Interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to a very special edition of Franchise Interviews, where for over 8 years, we've been asking the franchisepreneurs one on one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott. I'm the president of Franchise Interviews, and as we were saying earlier, we have a great show today. We're meeting with Lil Lavelle of Coyote Ugly Saloon Franchise, and the most famous bar on the planet is now the hottest franchise concept on the planet. Hi, Lil. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm awesome. How are you?
I'm doing great, Lil. It's great to have you on the show. We always like to ask our guests, where are you calling from today?
I'm calling from San Antonio Airport right now.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, that's great. Well, maybe we'll hear some planes in the background there, right?
Well, unfortunately, I have a feeling it's going to be the screaming kids you'll probably hear.
That's okay. Well, you know, I know you've been all over the place. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, I read about your background, your biography, which is fascinating, by the way. And I knew you grew up in New York. Do you miss New York, or do you get back once in a while?
You know what? I get back enough that I get my fill, and it's just, you know, an evolution in my character that now I love San Diego. I'm a California
yeah.
girl now.
Well, they say it's great. I mean, they say that San Diego is one of the best places in the country to live, isn't it?
You know what I think? It's just like business. You know, start out with something, and that's all you know. And as you start venturing the world, you know,
yeah.
you kind of change and things happen. But, yeah, it's pretty nice.
Right.
Pretty nice
that's
place.
Fantastic. That's great. Well, we're happy to have you on the show. Well, you know, one of the reasons we started the show, Lil, is we found that every business has a story. And yours is one of the most interesting I think we've had on the show in 8 years we've been doing the show because, I mean, Hollywood actually made a movie based on your life. And I thought, you know, maybe we can, you know, go right to the beginning and you could describe the history
mm-hmm.
or the evolution of Coyote Ugly Saloon.
Well, basically, when I went to college, I bartended and waited tables, like most college kids do. Afterwards,
right.
I worked on Wall Street for a year, but I made $250 a week. That wasn't cutting it. So I made most of my money to pay my rent bartending and managing bars. When I was about 24 years old, I had just made a decision. I'm either going back to, you know, 9 to 5, or I'm going
right.
to open my place. And so I saved all my money and opened the first Coyote.
That's fantastic. You know, when I was in my 20s, I think you and I come from, like, the same generation. I went to bartending school, Lil, and I learned how to make all the crazy drinks like yourself. And I would hate it when someone, particularly at the end of the night, would order a drink, like, with, like, 10 different ingredients in it. And it
oh,
seemed
God,
to be,
I
like, that was, like, one, that was one of the catalysts, wasn't it, for the concept, wasn't it?
Well, I was actually managing one place, this kind of rough and tumble country bar,
yeah.
but I was also
right.
bartending at this Brazilian steakhouse. And the Brazilian
yeah.
steakhouse, I would have to have like 4 blenders going at once with, you know, guava juice, margaritas,
yeah.
and, you know, all this stuff.
Right.
And I remember being like, oh, God, I hate
yeah.
this. It's horrible. So, you know, one of the things that I had already going for me was a huge following. So when I opened Coyote,
yeah.
you know, I opened the doors and already had hundreds of people who knew me and came in. And so they
right.
kind of knew the deal. You know, you're not walking in and ordering, you know, a pickle pear margarita at
right.
Coyote.
So, right.
You know, it was fun. And
yeah.
I think about it now that back then when you have nothing to lose,
right.
you know, you risk it all. You know, I could get in people's faces.
Sure.
So it panned out, thank God.
That's fantastic. One of the several concepts I love about your franchise is the powerful brand name, Lil. And I think you're going to be at the franchise show in England next year. I remember reading somewhere. I mean,
mm-hmm.
how do you typically describe the Coyote Ugly Saloon franchise? If someone, like, when someone came up to your booth and they said, so, like, typical question, like, what do you guys do? Where do you typically go from there?
I think the whole idea is that there's a million concepts that have female bartenders.
Yeah.
But the beauty about, honestly, ours is that we do have a movie and a TV show
yeah.
that
yeah.
has provided a lot of, you know, enlightenment to people. So
right.
when they come up to me at a franchise show, they actually usually know who we are.
Right, right.
What makes us different is how we can control our branding,
right.
how we have to make sure that when we are franchising that they're upholding the brand name and the brand concepts. So that's more, like, for me, it's not really starting from scratch anymore. People
right.
know who we are.
Right.
But it's
right.
making sure they understand that they can't change our concept.
Right, absolutely. And that's one of the things, you know, this is the theme that we've referenced over the show over the last 8 years, Lil. I mean, it's one of the things you're getting in franchising is the powerful brand name. It seems like there's so many possibilities for Coyote Ugly, you know, Saloon. I mean, are you guys going to get into things like, I mean, like coming out with your own line of, like, alcohol or T-shirts and things like that? Are you guys doing anything like that?
We actually have a Coyote Ugly Canadian whiskey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's already out there. The biggest problem it has been, we're actually only, right now, we're only allowed to be sold, I think, in 4 states because you have
okay.
to go state to state to get the
right.
permissions.
Right.
But we're right now in talks with a vodka and a tequila company.
Wow.
So, you know, cross fingers, things look
good. Right, right. That's huge, isn't it? I mean, did you ever imagine, like, I mean, when you were 24 years old, Lil, and I know you're very optimistic and positive, but, I mean, did you envision this, you know, like maybe 20 years later?
Not with Coyote.
No.
In fact, I was actually in negotiations with this guy. This is years ago. I don't even remember his name. But I had the Coyote in New York, and I actually wanted to open fast food, health food stores.
Right.
And in my mind back then, that's what I thought was going to be my big, you know, winning concept.
Right.
But when
right.
the movie came along, you know, there was no, you know, that was it. I mean, you can't get a bigger push in business than that.
Sure, absolutely. How has technology played a role in the business today, Lil, compared to, I mean, from when you first started doing this? I guess it's a lot different today, isn't it, in terms of technology?
I think that what technology has done is, in operations, has changed the game. The marketing is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
How
yeah.
people learn where they're going, you know, where do you want to go eat? Where's the
right.
movie theater? Where's this? So technology has now played a big part in changing how we promote
yeah.
our local locations. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's constantly
right.
evolving. So things
Absolutely.
Are not quite as straightforward as it used to be.
That's fantastic. Maybe we could jump to, like, franchising, Will. I mean, what types of characteristics, then, I mean, will you be looking for in your franchisees? I mean, do they have to have a background or experience in this type of business?
I would prefer that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is solidifying their finances, making sure
right.
that they have the infrastructure to have people who have operating experiences with, you know,
right.
nightclubs, bars, restaurants. So, you know, the one downfall with Coyote is that, you know, everybody and their mother wants to open one. So
mm-hmm.
we have to weed
right.
out the
yeah.
The people that don't have the experience.
What does it feel like? I mean, because Coyote now is in different countries now, too, aren't they, Lil? I mean, that must be an amazing
yeah.
experience for you to go to places like Russia, which I guess you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to
yeah.
some of these places must be amazing for you. What does that feel like for you?
I will tell you, when we first opened in Moscow, it was kind of emotional, honestly, because
yeah, yeah.
I couldn't believe my little bar in New York, you know, all of a sudden had all these locations. And,
yeah.
you know, there I am walking to work, you know, going by Red Square.
Right.
It was pretty, pretty incredible.
It was funny because I also went to Catholic school like you growing up, you know, and I remember
mm-hmm.
you saying, you know, I wonder what the nuns would think now. You know what I mean? It would be interesting going back.
Well, they certainly still call and ask for donations. So
I can imagine, right? That's funny. That's great. Oh, that's something. What's the training like, Lil? Your new franchisees. I mean, how does that typically work? I mean, do they get the training like in a Coyote Ugly saloon? I mean,
yeah.
where does it take place? Okay.
What they have to do is they have to come and they have to train at some of my locations, and then what we do is we take a training staff to help them open their location.
Right.
So they get an awful lot of training before they even open the doors.
That's fantastic. Is there such a thing as a typical day as a franchisee, Lil?
Mm-hmm. What's a typical day?
Yeah.
The day of awesomeness, obviously. You open the door.
I can imagine, right.
The millions of people come in. You want to know what? There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. I mean,
right.
you have to keep up
yeah.
with your banking. You have to keep up with your hiring. You have to keep up with your paperwork. You have to, you know how to do your inventory. But there's a lot that goes on. And then it changes as you open multiple locations because you have to learn how to manage people in a different way.
Right.
But from them to me, well, one, we have I have a team that's set up and they can call, you know, specific people. If they need help in marketing, they call one person. If they're
right.
looking for new sites, they call a different person. If they're,
right.
you know, trying to get helpful hints for how to do a specific promo night, they call another person. So we have a team that is there to support them when they need it.
Right, which is so important, particularly in franchising. In studying your background, it seemed to me like, you know, at a young age, it was almost like you were destined to become an entrepreneur. And the majority of our listeners, Lil, we call them aspiring franchisepreneurs because they seem to know that they want to go into franchising, but most of them don't even know where to begin. So from all of your experience in entrepreneurship, I mean, what advice would you give them in their quest to buy a franchise?
Well, I think the most important thing in the bar nightclub business, so this might not translate to other people, but
right.
to know that you cannot live the lifestyle. People in my business that don't succeed are the ones living the lifestyle. And when I say that, I mean, you know, they're out drinking all night because they, you know, they think they're the cool bar owner, things like that. And I've seen many failures, not only of businesses, but of people. You know, they fail in life because they decide that this is their identity when the reality is this is business. And you have to have your money in place. You can't be undercapitalized. You have to have a strong management team behind you. One of the biggest things I've learned, and I think it's helped me grow, is to really look for people that I think add to me. So, you know, maybe they're better at something. Well, you're always learning something. And when you think you know it all, you don't know anything. So I think it's very important to always kind of, you know, keep your eyes and ears open all the time.
That's great. I think that's great advice. It seemed like you knew it at such a young age, too. You know, it seems young to me now, 24, but, I mean, you realized that cash was king as well, you know. I mean, how you were, you know, able to save a lot of that money, you know, to invest into, you know, these different things. You know, I thought that was very clever on your part.
You know what I think? And, you know, I don't know how it would be now, but when you come from nothing, it's always a struggle. I remember always being worried, you know, always feeling like you have to have the nest egg, always making sure things happen. And, I gave every dollar to open that first bar.
I
mean, literally, I would have had, you know, nothing, zero. I just knew for my future that I needed to make a change, that I didn't want to work for somebody else the rest of my life.
That's fantastic. So I can ask you the next question. What are the plans for the future then? I mean, where do you see Coyote Ugly maybe in, like, you know, 3 to 5 years down the road, Lil?
Well, I think we'll be open. We hired a new his title. I'm sorry, people are screaming. we hired a new VP of global franchising. So what I'm hoping is we're going to open a lot more stores internationally.
Right.
And, you know, the dream is Coyote Ugly Hotel. That's the dream.
Wow.
Coyote Ugly
Casino.
Fantastic. That'd be awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I won't be surprised if you achieve that goal, you know, because I can see you're very driven. I was wondering, has anyone ever approached you on writing a book about your life? I mean, it seems like it's a great story as well.
We actually joke about it. A few people have come to me, but we joke about it because I say I'd lose all my liquor licenses if I actually
That's great. That's fantastic. What's the best way for our listeners, Lil, to get more information on becoming a franchisee? Is the website the best place to go to?
Yes, go to the website. That website gets you directed to my global franchising team, and they can get information from that site. So it's www.coyoteuglysaloon.com.
That's fantastic. I want to thank you again for coming on the show, Lil. It was a privilege for me to interview you. I've been actually following you for some time now. So to be able to speak to you today has been a real privilege. So I'd like to invite you back next year as you continue to grow, because I think you're going to be very, very successful.
Well, thank you so much.
It was my pleasure, Lil. We'll be right back with more franchise interviews.
Franchisers, are you looking to reach aspiring entrepreneurs looking to buy a franchise? Are you looking to reach a highly educated audience on franchising? For over 8 years, Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com. where you can hear and read interviews as well as get tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts and attorneys, and our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919. That's 610-905-2919. Franchise Interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your move.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Franchise Interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.
Welcome to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship. Listen to interviews with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys. And now, welcome your host, Marty McDermott, and Franchise Interviews.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Franchise Interviews, where for over 8 years, we've been asking the franchisors who own one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott. I'm the president of Franchise Interviews, and we have a great show. We're meeting with Scott Barnett, author of Gumption, Taking Bubblegum Shrimp from Movie to Restaurant. We're going to talk to Scott about that in just a moment on Franchise Interviews. So stick around, because we got a great show.
Are you one of those special people who are willing to go after your dreams and goals? Are you ready to fulfill that dream of owning your own business with the security of a proven brand, the opportunity to take control of your future and own a Rita's Italian Ice franchise is within your reach?
Rita's is seeking success-oriented individuals who are ready to make a change in their life, and Rita's offers unparalleled training and support to assure your success. And did you know the frozen treat industry is a recession-proof industry, and there are Rita's in 23 states currently with 540 stores open. Rita's Italian Ice has been around for 25 years and is listed as a top-performing franchise by the Wall Street Journal.
Now here's the really good part. Rita's Italian Ice is a unique and amazing taste treat. It's smoother than a snow cone, and it combines ice with real fresh fruit. The real fruit adds dramatically to the taste, and it comes in over 40 flavors. The ice and fruit are mixed on site and made fresh daily, and it is delicious.
You'll want to know more about this exciting and successful franchise opportunity. Go to www.ownaritas.com and get all your questions answered. That's www.ownaritas.com to take control of your dreams and future today. You don't want to wait any longer to be a part of this adventure. www.ownaritas.com.
Are you looking for a franchise that delivers? Businesses will always need shipping, and for more than 25 years, loyal customers have depended on Unishippers for reliable savings and exceptional customer service. Unishippers is focused on just one thing, helping small and medium-sized businesses save time and money on all their shipping needs. And as the largest reseller of complete shipping services in the country, we have the buying power to ensure that we succeed. The Unishippers franchise offers low startup costs, no equipment or real estate required because they're not retail, residual income, and a quality of life and work-life balance. For more information on becoming a Unishippers franchisee, go to www.unishippers.com and click Franchise Opportunities or call Franchise Development at 801-708-5822. That's 801-708-5822. Franchise Interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to a very special edition of Franchise Interviews, where for over 8 years, we've been asking the franchisepreneurs one-on-one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott. I'm the president of Franchise Interviews, and as we were saying earlier, we have a great show today. We're meeting with Scott Barnett, author of Gumption, Taking Bubba Gump from Movie to Restaurant. Hey, Scott, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Scott. Yeah, congratulations on the book, by the way. It's I'm a professor for Kaplan University, so I have the opportunity of reading a lot of different business books, and this one is on my books to recommend to my students and friends. So it really is fantastic.
That's great to hear. Thank you.
I love the movie Forrest Gump, Scott. I think, I think I'm one of those people who identified with Bubba's character for my love of shrimp, and I got the chance of working in the seafood industry for several years. Why did you think the creation of an entertainment restaurant based on a single movie like Forrest Gump could be successful?
You know, at first I wasn't sure, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
We really weren't certain that this could work. What really caused me to think that to change my mind was that when I really screened the movie and looked at it, and I realized that there was that Zemeckis, who was the creator and
right.
producer and director, was really bottling magic in a certain way. And
uh-huh.
and then as we looked at the research that came out of it, what we learned was there was an unforced translation from a movie to a restaurant, and it
uh-huh.
really made sense that such a thing would exist. So on the basis of that, and of course the needs of the company, that's why we went ahead and did it.
That's fantastic. We're speaking with Scott Barnett, author of Gumption, Taking Bubba Gump from Movie to Restaurant. And Scott, what prompted you to work in the restaurant industry? It seems like, there's something that you like about that particular industry.
You know, it was really by chance. I was working in a gas station in Palm Desert, California, and I was saving up money for college. And I ended up borrowing a friend's motorcycle and put it down on a gravelly curve and broke my ankle and tore up my hands. I couldn't work, and so I had to put college off. And when I was able to work again, I started as a valet parking attendant at a restaurant. And one day, a hostess came out and said, "Hey, you're going to bus tables tonight." And I did. And the hours just sort of flew by. The work was hard, but it was a lot of fun. And
right.
and I felt like we were putting on nightly theater every night. And we were doing it better than anybody else in town. So out of that came this kind of desire to continue doing it. So when I did go on to college, which I eventually did, I kept working as a cook and bartender and
right.
so on. And it just got in my blood, I guess.
It sounded like it was your destiny, from a young age. And it sounded like those, in reading the book too, Scott, that, those owners of that particular restaurant that you were working for, they had a big impact on your life as well, didn't they?
They did. The whole thing was that they treated it as kind of an amalgamation of family and business,
yeah.
and it was really unique. And I thought, this is something I really like doing. And when I worked before, it was you always referred to your boss as Mr. Johnson or Mr. Anderson, and this guy was just Lyman. And it was really a very different and really kind of fun way of looking at your professional life, if you will. And that's really what it was.
That's fantastic. For our listeners, Scott, who may have never been in a Bubba Gump Shrimp Company restaurant, what makes Bubba Gump so different from some other like entertainment restaurants like Planet Hollywood or Hard Rock Cafe?
Well, we in the end, the restaurant business is really about some very basic things. It's about hot food hot, cold food cold, service with a smile, in pleasant, clean, interesting surroundings, and so on. What I think makes Bubba Gump different is that, you know, we had come from a background. We had actually been running a company called Rusty Pelican Restaurants, which was an upscale seafood dinner house. And so when we came into this so-called eatertainment, which is a kind of a mix of entertainment and restaurants,
right,
we brought with us kind of a stronger and I think better quality filters in terms of the food product and the service and what have you. So when we did Bubba Gump, we actually wanted to make it a restaurant. A lot of these people who get into that business from the entertainment side, they think they're in the trademark business, or they think they're in
right,
you know, something else. And the reality is, you know, you're in the restaurant business. And so that's how we looked at it. And I think it made us pretty different from a lot of our competition.
Why is the restaurant business so difficult, Scott?
You know, I think people make it difficult for one thing, but something else really is that the restaurant business it's very capital intensive. It's very, meaning you need some money to do it. And, you know, if you miss somewhere on the life cycle curve and you're putting something out there that people just don't want, I don't care how good you are, you're just not going to make it, because
right,
you've got to listen to the customer. They're the ultimate arbiter, and they decide what is desirable and what is not. And there's a very high failure rate, as you know, and I think a lot of it, most of it, has to do with being undercapitalized, not being in the right location, or just not giving people what they want when they want it.
Yeah, I think that's well said. We're speaking with Scott Barnett, author of Gumption, Taking Bubba Gump Shrimp from Movie to Restaurant. And Scott, whose idea was it to include a retail store that sold Forrest Gump merchandise right inside the restaurant? That was very clever. Was the retail store your biggest surprise?
Yes, it was. We all knew we were going to do a retail store. We just did,
right.
I think that everybody, because the hats and T-shirts had been a huge part Forrest Gump,
right.
In terms of the movie. And they had, believe it or not, I mean, Paramount was shocked at the amount of hats and T-shirts they sold. And so when they did, we thought, well, we'll do that, but we're not going to do it halfway. We'll actually do a real store, unlike, say,
right,
Planet Hollywood, which had a or Hard Rock Cafe, which had just a counter, which you walked up to and there were T-shirts on the wall, and you sort of picked one out and bought it. And so it was a huge surprise to us and a happy one. But in the end, we knew we weren't going to be a retail store. We were going to be a restaurant,
right,
that contained a retail store. And so it worked really well for us. We did about 15% of our sales, and it grew into it really grew into a $30 million business. But
that's incredible.
In the end, I mean, you still have to be a restaurant.
That's fantastic. I mean, there was a lot of innovative things that, you know, that went on. The hiring of a Forrest Gump impersonator to be present at restaurant openings, I mean, that was another great example, and I saw that on the internet. How successful was that?
That was really something. I was standing outside working on the sign at the first Bubba Gump in Monterey, California, and a guy kind of walked by out of the corner of my eye, and he's in white. I thought, that guy looks like Forrest Gump.
Right.
So he goes into the restaurant and talks to my director of marketing, Kathy Peterson, and she comes out and she goes, "Hey, you got to come in here and see this guy." And I did, and it turned out he was dressed in the same suit that Forrest was in the movie, and
right,
he had a checkered shirt with a suitcase, and he was in Nike sneakers, and the guy looked a lot like Tom.
Oh my God!
And he'd gotten his haircut like Forrest, and so I said, "Well, we'll hire him for the opening, and it'll be a novelty." Well, he ended up keeping him for a long time.
Wow.
And he must be the most photographed guy in America, because
I thought it was Tom Hanks. Yeah, when I saw it too, Scott. I mean, I thought it was. I mean, he looked just like Forrest Gump, the character. I mean, it was identical. I mean, it really was very clever, you know. So I thought that was great. I was mentioning to you, Scott, I teach for a university and I teach marketing, and restaurants are essentially a marketing business. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the four P's of marketing and how a new graduate can really understand the mindset of a restaurant CEO.
Sure. I mean, the four P's of marketing, as you know, if you're instructing in a university or college, is that, you know, it's for price, promotion, place, and product. And
mm-hmm.
and we, I always kind of viewed my approach to the business that way. I think that in terms of Bubba Gump, we really looked at that and kind of devised a marketing strategy out of that. And then, you know, and looked at it from the standpoint of our strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and so on, just as you would any strategic plan or business plan. And then we developed our marketing plan around that. In terms of pricing and product and promotion and all that, we really looked at Bubba Gump, and we did a lot of research, a lot of market research
mm-hmm.
around it after we had gotten it open. We didn't do market research beforehand because there was nothing to do research about.
Right.
Once we did, you know, we spent an inordinate amount of time doing research at every opening, both quantitative and qualitative. So we would do quantitative research like what we call nose counting, where we'd put a questionnaire in front of
mm-hmm.
300, 400, 500 people. And then get a statistically significant response.
Right.
And things like what did you like about it, what you didn't like, and so on. And then we did focus groups, a number of them over the years, that where we would talk about what the impressions were and get an idea of what the overall general feeling was about the company. In terms of the menu itself, the product, and so on. I mean, and by the way, we view the product as not just the food. We also viewed it as the overall experience, the tenor of the service, the how people viewed the ambiance and the atmosphere. And in the end, I mean, what we were trying to create was what I'll call an emotional souvenir that people could take with them and do what is most important in the restaurant business, which is create a memorable experience that they're not only seeing, but they're part of. And so that's part of the engagement that we tried to do, was to get people to be a part of the experience as much as they were to,
mm-hmm.
quote, experience it, unquote. And that was really, I think, where the product that we created was kind of unique.
That's fantastic. I have my marketing students listen to that clip. I think what you just said there is fantastic. Well, speaking of location, you know, we're talking about the marketing mix, Scott. I mean, you did some interesting things with locations. I mean, you took you looked at poor performing restaurants that were in great locations. What were some of the biggest location challenges that you experienced?
I suppose one of the things that people do is they say, oh, well, I'm going to locate on the pier, or I'm going to locate in this place, and that'll solve the problem. And really, it's not. You have to. It's a little bit like putting some attention to detail so that you get the whole. You don't just go 9 yards and miss the first down. I guess the biggest challenge we ever had on a great location that was really not doing well was San Francisco at Pier 39, where. They were at the end of the pier, had a great view of all three bridges, the Golden Gate, the Bay Bridge, and so on, and yet you couldn't find the place. So we were able to negotiate a deal where we put a sign, huge sign,
mm-hmm.
giant sign at the base of the pier, and saying, we're here at the end of the pier. And then second, it was on the second floor, which is typically the kiss of death for restaurant locations, but we got the landlord to put an escalator up with our treatment on it. And then finally, it was sort of on the perimeter of the pier. So we projected our presence into the center of the pier by leasing the space in front of us, and then cladding it with our treatment. So we were able to take a restaurant that had barely done $2 million and turn it into a $12 million restaurant with our name and so on. So, I mean, there's things you have to do. You can't just say, well, I'm going to be here on the beach and think that I'm going to do it. You got to do a lot of other stuff.
You have so much experience in the restaurant industry. You know, it's interesting because it probably, all that experience, I don't know if it prepared you for, you know, what was it like dealing with Paramount Studios, Scott? I mean, that had to be something new for you.
You know, I likened dealing with Paramount as to dealing with armed preschoolers. You have to be really careful. But in the end, I mean, they're very tough negotiators. They're very, they contrary to what everybody may think, the Paramount, you know, the movie business likes money, and they get after it pretty hard. But in the end, I have to say this about the people at Paramount. They took a risk with us because, you know, we were a company that had been in Chapter 11 because, when I took over Rusty Pelican, it was technically insolvent, so we had to reorganize it. And they went with us over, you know, groups like Darden or Brinker and so on, which much bigger companies, because our vision was consistent with theirs. And they took a chance. The mantra in Hollywood is don't do anything that'll get you fired. And they took a risk with us, which was we were fine with. So in the end, we got the deal done.
That's interesting. Yeah, and I know you talk about in the book. In going international, you decided to use franchising as an alternative to expand. Scott, why franchising, and what was that experience like for you?
You know, the reason for franchising, we didn't franchise domestically and don't. And they still don't, although, you know, we sold the company in 2011, but they don't franchise domestically now. But internationally, it makes total sense to do that or license it, one or the other, because, you know, there are so many different countries and so many different ways of doing business and rules and laws and regulations that it would be very presumptuous for someone to think that they could operate a business in any overseas market. Now, we did operate a business overseas in Hong Kong. We were joint ventured that deal, and we were the operating group that did it. On the other hand, we'd also joint ventured in Mexico. And we would never presume to try to operate in Mexico. Our partner was an experienced restaurant guy, and his team operates the restaurant, and rightfully so. So I think you just have to match your needs and wants with what the market will bear at the particular location that you're doing it. We looked at the whole world. We hired a company called Cine Little. Jim Little was the guy we used, and he did a study of the whole world and said, okay, this would be franchise, this would be no, don't go there, and this would be, you know, joint venture territory. So that's how we kind of viewed it.
I remember, I think you mentioned in the book too, it was some difficult experiences. Was it in Manila, Scott? I mean, you talk a little bit about that. What happened? If you could talk a little bit about what happened there, I thought that was interesting.
Well, in the book Gumption, I talk about Manila as being where we first where we got a spanking, is the way I describe it. Because we got involved with a group who were essentially swindlers, and they had developed kind of a network of people within the Philippines, and we signed up with them. They were one of the first franchisees we were with, and they ended up with money trouble, as you would expect, and they were looting the company as well as looting some other companies. And over a period of time, we got more and more dissatisfied with them, and I went over and said, look, I want to be paid, number one, I want this to happen, that to happen, and so on. And they abandoned the restaurant on Christmas, just before Christmas, and I ended up getting a phone call and had to fly over there and take over and operate myself the restaurant, because our VP of franchise had some personal issues he was dealing with, and it was my deal. So I ended up on New Year's Eve in Manila, sitting at the Peninsula Hotel trying to, and you couldn't go outside because, and I think the chapter title is Raining Bullets in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't go outside
yeah.
on New Year's Eve because they fire their guns in the air and the bullets come back down. And I guess there's thousands of bullets flying back to the ground. You can't go outside. So,
oh, my God.
Pretty funny.
And that's what I love about the book, you know, is you're sharing of all these different experiences, you know, the ups, the downs, and, you know, everything in between. I thought it was fantastic. A lot of our listeners that listen to Franchise Interviews, Scott, we call them, you know, a lot of them are aspiring restaurateurs. I mean, they want to, you know, own their own, you know, franchise or a restaurant. What lessons can you pass along to them in their quest?
Well, I would say this, that in there's a chapter in the book called CEO Lessons that I talk about where in the book Gumption, where I talk about what I learned and what I think are important things to remember. But one of the things is keep it simple, stupid is the principle that I learned from the founder of Rusty Pelican, Pete Syracuse, a really smart restaurateur and entrepreneur. And he was always saying, you know, but don't overcomplicate it. Keep it simple, stupid. And if you're going to be in the franchise business, it should be something that is what I use, and I don't know if the word even exists, but I call it franchisable, meaning that it's
mm-hmm.
that it can be replicated and duplicated. And in the restaurant business, that's a very big, important part of the whole thing. You know, are there standard ways of doing things that are really, really standard and really replicatable. So keep it simple. And I think the other thing is follow your passion. If you're really, and I know this sounds trite and you hear it from a lot of successful people, but it's true. It is,
right.
If you follow your passion and you're not, you know, you're not undercapitalized and all the rest of things, then you will be successful because unless you're completely incompetent. But I mean, it's really the key to success in any business, but particularly in restaurants.
That's fantastic. What was the process of, like, writing this book, Scott? I mean, how did you go about it? I mean, one of my dreams is to write a book one day. How did you go about writing this book? I mean, did you just sit down? I mean, there's so much in there. I was trying to picture the way you went about writing it.
You know, it's the genesis of the book was that I was at the University of Arizona speaking with Len Jessup, who was then the dean of the business school. Now he's president of University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And he encouraged me to write a case study for the grad students at Eller School of Business at U of A. And so I started writing it, and I got 10,000 words into it, and I still hadn't opened a restaurant. He was looking at it and saying, you know, you should turn this into a book. And I thought, well, you know what, I can, and I did. And so the process really went like this. I would, you know, get up in the morning, write 1,500 to 2,000 words, and then put it away. And then in the afternoon, I'd go back to it and look at it and change it around and what have you. And then the next day, look at it again, and if I liked it, great. And then write another 1,500 to 2,000 words. And that was how the book got written. And it was really – the words didn't flow out, I guess, but they were certainly not, it certainly was not a difficult process for me.
That's fantastic. I mean, do you have other books in the work now, Scott? I mean, now that, you know, this book is getting so much attention.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility of another book. It's not about Bubba Gump, but it's about something else. I'm considering it. I know the work involved. So
sure, of course. Right.
And I have a consulting and a practice and a speaking practice and so on. And I have some other businesses with which I'm involved. But I think there's a possibility of another book. Sure.
That's fantastic. What's the best way that our listeners can buy the book, Scott? Are any websites that they go to? Can they go directly to your website or they go to Amazon? What's the best way to get the book?
Yeah, I think the best thing is you can go to IndieBooks or Amazon.com or, of course, almost all Barnes & Nobles are carrying the book. And of course, you can get it in an e-version online at Nook or iBooks or what have you.
Well, it was a privilege for me to finally get to speak to you, Scott. I think the book is fantastic, and I'm recommending it to all my students and friends and family. So you did a great job with the book. So I'd like to definitely have you back on the show again in the future. I'm a fan.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much, Scott. We'll be right back with more Franchise Interviews.
Need a business loan? Talk to Diamond Financial Services, the experts in franchise financing nationwide. Whether you're looking to start a franchise, acquire an existing franchise, or expand your territory through opening new locations, Diamond Financial stands by your side start to finish. From pre-qualification to packaging and presenting your application to securing a financial commitment and through the loan closing process, Diamond Financial is there. While you're waiting, thousands of others are making their financial dreams come true. Don't wait any longer. Pre-qualify now by completing a confidential, no-obligation financial analysis. Let's face it, traditional banks just aren't in the business of financing small business. At Diamond Financial, we specialize in securing franchise loans from $100,000 to $3 million and equipment leasing up to $150,000. Let us help you get started. Go to www.franchisefunding.net or call 877-508-2274. That's franchisefunding.net, 877-508-2274.
Today's great quote in franchising is being brought to you by
the Stone Coat Franchise Opportunity. Are you looking for a unique and lucrative franchise opportunity? If so, take a look at Stone Coat. With a patented process which creates a true stone finish on almost any wall or ceiling, Stone Coat is a true game-changing product in the multi-billion dollar construction industry. Stone Coat is applied faster, cleaner, and cheaper than conventional quarried stone, which saves both time and money. With advantages in remodel and new construction of both residential and commercial projects, Stone Coat is a true crossover product. The Stone Coat Franchise Opportunity provides a low startup cost, low operating expenses, comprehensive training, ongoing support, and no royalty payments. For more information on the Stone Coat Franchise Opportunity, go to www.stonecoatfranchise.com. That's www.stonecoatfranchise.com or call us at 972-380-2700. That's 972-380-2700.
Hi, everyone. This is Marty McDermott, the president of Franchise Interviews, and welcome to another edition of Great Quotes in Franchising, Reach podcast. You get to hear a great quote in franchising. You know, we've been hosting franchise interviews now almost 10 years, and during that time, we've had some really great quotes on our show. One of my daily habits is I try to go back every single day and I'll listen to a past show, and now I'm kind of like up to the point where I have like almost like 500 different podcasts to choose from, and one that I was listening to most recently was a conversation I was having with my co-host Don Johnson. And Don was talking about an article written by Jeff Elgin kind of giving advice to aspiring entrepreneurs as far as what you should do before buying a franchise. And one piece of the article really stood out. It was talking about kind of like meeting the family. You know, if you remember like when you were dating your husband or your wife, and you know, you got a chance to meet their family, and was that probably one of the criteria, you know, in deciding whether you go forward and get married to this person, or do you kind of say, you know what, I don't think this is going to work. Well, it's the same thing with franchising. So here we go with another edition of Great Quotes in Franchising by Franchise Interviews.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, that's crucial. You want to know how smooth the opening has gone and how quickly the marketing and how effective it is to start getting people in the door and start getting some potential clients. The third one is how well does everybody get along? Many franchises describe theirs as being just like family. That may be true, but find out whether it's like Beaver Cleavers or Archie Bunkers.
That's true, because family can mean a lot of different things, can't it?
Right.
Depends whose family we're talking about.
If you don't want to live a life of conflict with someone calling you meathead every day, then the answer to that question is important. Make sure you have a good feeling about the support and teamwork of the organization and that it matches your values. And, you know, I guess franchises have what's called the discovery day, and you get to go meet them. And I guess, you know, if you're good at kind of evaluating people, I guess you'll get a good idea of how well everybody gets along and how professional the staff is, and if it does have that family-type atmosphere. I mean, you know, you definitely want to be involved. I mean, you can be excited about a great franchise system, but if there's franchisees who are complaining and there's a lot of change at top management and they don't seem like everyone's very comfortable and friendly with each other. I mean, those are all warning signs.
Yeah, it's like meeting your like when you met your wife's family for the first time. You know what I mean? That's what I kind of compare it to, you know, is when you went over that house for the first time to meet, you know, the parents and the cousins and all that other stuff. You know, it's very similar. You just know, you know, if there's a match, you can tell by the culture and things like that. So, yeah, I think that's excellent.
I don't know about you, but I missed all my in-law warning signs. I really messed up there. How about you?
You did. Well, mine are listening now, so I have to be careful.
Number four, how much money can I make? The question is the most important one for many prospective franchisees. You want to determine the average startup investment, the average unit sales, main expenses, gross and net margins for the business, and how long it takes a new unit to break even and start making money for the owner. It's usually best to save the money questions for last. Most people are reluctant to discuss their personal finances with someone they don't know. You'll find that franchisees are more willing to cover this subject once you've established some rapport with them. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of important. You know, can I make money with the franchise?
Exactly, yeah. And again, the franchisees can give you that information. You know, when you're talking to a franchisor at a franchise show, they can't discuss that, can they, Don? You know, I mean, that's, again, there's, what, the item 19, I guess it is. It's like 25% of the franchise community has the financial data in there. But a lot of the information I understand, too, is like averages, you know, so averages can be a little deceiving, you know. So if, for example, $1,000 and $10,000, you know, and the average in between that, you know, it's 5.5, you know, so it's a little deceiving sometimes as far as, you know, who's making what. So you just have to be a little careful with that.
Right. The fifth one is, if you had to do it all over again, would you still buy this franchise? No matter what the answer is, explore it. Your response should always be why. The most common answer is a pause followed by yes. This usually means that there are valid arguments for answering yes or no, but pride of ownership usually tips the balance towards the positive answer. Ask for the strongest argument they can think of for answering yes or no. The contrast can be very informative, especially if you can read between the lines. Another benefit of these calls is that you will likely find your interest in the franchise quickly increasing or waning after a handful. Even if you can't really put your finger on why either of these reactions are happening, trust your gut. Your instincts have a way of making you feel right or wrong about a decision like this, and they are usually correct. So this is all good practical advice, you know, with your due diligence. But, yeah, you know, nothing's better than speaking to the actual people who have gone through the whole process and own the franchise.
Asking the French entrepreneur who owns one. Does that sound familiar? You know, it's absolutely. There's a lot of truth behind that. I think also too, Don, is you know, when you're doing this, to, you know, schedule the calls properly. You know, I mean, again, if you want to talk to Subway franchisees, you're not going to typically call them during lunch hour, are you? You know, between like 11:30 and you know 2 o'clock. You know, I mean, you want to schedule a time, an appropriate time, where, of course, you know, you have their full attention. I think that's very important.
Good point.
As well. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And, again, I learned that from our show, so I don't remember who said that. But
here's something through Business News Daily, Marty. Franchises offer money back.
That particular podcast came from an interview we did with a company called Ambiance Radio, a really cool concept, talking about the impact of music and marketing and sales. A really great interview. So if you want to listen to that whole show, you can go to franchiseinterviews.com, go to franchises listed alphabetically, and just go to Ambiance Radio. And again, you can hear the whole article, the whole discussion on that particular topic, and of course you can hear the interview that we did with Ambiance Radio. And lastly, we'd just like to thank everyone for making this podcast such a big success. It's hard to imagine that 10 years later we're still doing it. So I just want to thank everyone for making it a success, and to just keep listening, sending in your questions, and we'll see you again soon with another edition of Great Quotes in Franchising from Franchise Interviews. Take care, everyone.